nothing could have ever been done to prevent this. We call BS. We say that tough, they say that tougher gun laws do not decrease gun violence. We call BS. They say a good guy with a gun stops a bad guy with a gun. We call BS. They say guns are just tools like knives and are as dangerous as cars. We call BS.
It's Friday, February 23rd, 2018. Yes, calling BS right here. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. I am Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker-in-chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. In today's show, students bring the hurt on the NRA. Wayne Pierre, you know, CEO of the NRA, decides he's got to kind of like double down on Cold War rhetoric. The commies are coming in the body of Kamala Harris, apparently. Florida lawmakers are to introduce gun bills today. That is only because of the students who have been organizing from Parkland High School and across the state. Right wing decides to conduct a smear campaign against those students. Of course they did. And Trump wants to arm teachers, pays homage to the death cult. Vulcan, Moloch, Vulcan, Moloch. West Virginia teachers walk out statewide. They have had enough. Shut down schools across the state and students walk out of school in solidarity with their teachers. This weekend, tomorrow, actually, from 10 to 12 in most locations, is the Working People's Day of Action. This is a last-ditch effort to put pressure upon the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, ahead of Monday's Janus versus AFSCME arguments. This is something else, folks. This is a deciding moment in public sector unions across the country. Are we facing right to work for less nation? We'll see. Rick Gates. Manafort's little lapdog got rolled. And Missouri governor does a reverse Icarus. Got a little too close to the hellish gates. Yes, that rising GOP star snaps nudies of his mistress and threatens to blackmail her. Yeah, that'll kind of end a political career. Well, maybe. I don't know. Given in the Trump era, who the heck knows what's real anymore. They'll probably double down and want to promote him. Maybe Trump will hire him and bring him into the White House. Nation of immigrants, not no more, folks. Yes, while the craziness was going on, the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services Agency changed its official mission statement. Right? It's no longer welcoming people to talk about this nation of immigrants. It now only administers the nation's lawful immigration system. That's great. And a man crashes a stolen bakery truck into Planned Parenthood in New Jersey. Right? That gets us down to the quotidian, folks. The little everyday detail. In segment two, we've got a big segment two, guys, today. The PA focus. Holy cow. Pennsylvania's new congressional maps, district by district. We're not going to be able to get through absolutely everything, but holy moly, this has just been a whirlwind. As the Pennsylvania Supreme Court hands down its new maps. And, of course, Senator Toomey made the little trip up to Harrisburg to basically say they're going to impeach the PA Supreme Court. He and Ryan Costello are kind of got themselves all up in the jitters. We want to get that going. Some interesting stuff about the districts, which we'll get into. Rick Saccone's life in Congress. Oh, it burns so bright. But as they say, from Blade Runner, Ricky, the light that burns so bright burns half as fast. Something like that. Yeah, we'll look at his district. Bye-bye, Rick. And you remember, I have been saying on this program for a long time that the future of Pennsylvania is in the Lehigh Valley. Holy moly, with this redistricting, Greg Edwards may just be that future. As the Lehigh Valley is finally finally a coherent congressional district. This is going to be a game changer. And Pashy's new chancellor, or interim chancellor, Whitney, calls faculty arrogant. That's always nice. And what else does she do? Well, she basically lets everybody know that there's going to be a tuition hike and budget cuts. Right? That's despite evidence to the contrary, as we talked about last week on the show, the Howard Bunces report. Proof positive that Pashy is in fine conditions, that this is all about shock doctrine politics. And company with that, the PA Student Power Network launches its College for All PA, calling on political candidates and sitting legislators to take a pledge for tuition-free college. Now, that's going to be important because we also got Scott Wagner at this week's budget hearings basically saying he's planning on shutting down Pashy's universities if he gets to be governor. York schools closed again today after third day of direct and specific threats. I'm saying it was yesterday, so today's the 4. And I've got my little taste of the beginning of the PSSAs as my son is going to be keeping a journal of his experiences as he's kind of having to prepare for these tests. We're still on the kind of opting out edge after his first day. I'll talk a little bit about that. Maybe I'll get to that in the last call today. Today's last call, Sean gets dragged into an alt-right pissing match between Evan McLaren and the Big Sarge on Twitter. And is it a patriarchal race to Mars? Really cool piece. I'm going to talk about that. Saucony Creek from out in Kutztown is planning to open a tap room at Franklin Street Station in Reading. That's huge. That's awesome. And Free Will released the orange-colored Malcontent. I'm going to have to give my apologies for that. I thought it was being released last week. It was actually the Tuesday. So I went down there to pick it up last Friday, and it wasn't there. So I had to go back. But,
dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, exactly. Holy moly, is that good. It is awesome. Saucony Creek has got its unicorn, right? The unicorn pre-sale going on now through March 2nd, right? That you can buy tickets online. We'll give you details in the show notes. You go on there, you got to purchase tickets for 3 crawlers and a draft for March 3rd. Cool thing about that, you pick it up on March 3rd, you can stick around. It's their 5th birthday. There's going to be live music. One of the bands there will be Frog Holler, if anybody knows them. And I also just had a great rum barrel age Schnickelfritz that I'll talk about in the show. I want to remind everybody to tune into the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can also tune in on the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And if you missed the show, no worries, man. Free Speech TV is now archived. He's got all the Rick Smith Show archives up there on their website at freespeech.org. Just go freespeech.org and search for Rick Smith, and boom, they're all right there. Want to thank our newest member, Jarrett. Jarrett, thank you so much, man. You came in at the $5 a month level. That is absolutely huge, like another member. One kind of more attempt to move this forward, to bring the noise. If you like what you hear, you want to support Pull No Punches Progressive Media, become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. Not ready to become a member? No problem. You can make a one-time donation by going to ragingchickenpress.org and click on Support and Membership tab. Click on Donate and you'll be good to go. Remember, we just got a couple more days left. If you come in at the $10 a month level, become a member at $10 a month, we will send you Steven Singer's new book, Gadfly on the Wall, A Public School Teacher Speaks Out on Racism and Reform. Whoa, so big day, Sean. Big day. Big day.
Holy moly. where are the week?
Tell me about it. It was funny. At the beginning of this week, I said, I was kind of thinking it's going to be a slower week, but not at all. God.
It's pretty fast. I mean, just think about it. This time last week, Mueller was bringing out the indictments on the Russian nationals.
Yeah, and now we've got a new indictment.
Gates is rolling bodies over.
Oh man, it's like the Gates thing is crazy because new indictments came out against Manafort, and it's all. I mean, you remember we talked about this for a while. The folks over at the Majority Report talk about it like this. Like Rick Smith talks about it like this. It's like really what we're, you know, if you start thinking about everything in terms of like a mob mentality as opposed to like Cold War politics or something like this, then everything begins to make sense. Because what these new indictments that
tax evasion, fraud.
Yeah, exactly. It's all these kind of like, you know, micro Ponzi schemes and fraudulent documents to in order to kind of get loans on real estate. Right? I mean, like just lying to banks. Right. I mean, shit like that. And it's
Receiving $14 million from a despot.
Yeah. I mean, it's like it's just, man, I'm telling you, it's made my head spin. I was watching the Maddow show last night just to kind of, you know, to get my weekly dose of Russia. And that was just like wild to see these indictments coming down. And that Gates is free. Rick Gates, who was kind of like the assistant to Manafort during in the Trump administration. Right. Like campaign, like everything else, you know. You have to figure out what week you're talking about to know if they actually work for Trump or not, because things have been turnover has been insane there. But Gates is just, I mean, I think he's got no place left to go. They produced documents as part of the indictments yesterday that were basically, they showed that he was helping coordinate kind of the frauds for kind of real estate purchases and things like this. I think that guy's got no place else to go but to roll. I'm telling you, Mueller is like no joke.
Yeah, it seems like it's been ratcheting it up a little bit lately.
Oh, it's really interesting. It's like, you know, it's kind of like I'm like, oh, the master. He's kind of got that FBI Jedi stuff going for him, right? But so don't worry, you know, once they get done with Trump, maybe they're going to come for activists and he'll do the same thing for us. You know, who knows? Don't trust the FBI is my kind of good idea. So that was kind of big news just in terms of national politics, in terms of Trump. But I think that, you know, we've got a lot of stories that are kind of still ongoing right now that have been really amazing and impressive this week. If you just look at what's going on with these student activists down in Florida and kind of this movement, the Never Again movement, kind of what they've been calling it a little bit, to push back against the NRA, calling for assault weapons bans. And, you know, it's kind of like this. People start talking about this being a game changer. And, you know, and we'll see. We'll see when the Republican machine kicks in and how hard the NRA is going to push here. But these students, man, they have cracked into the national discourse by saying what many Americans have been saying for a long time now, right? They basically say there's no reason why people should have AR-15s, right? There's no reason why weapons of war should be sold to the public, right?
Or you're able to have a 30 like bullet clip or something like that.
Exactly.
High capacity magazines.
Right. And again,
I mean,
yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No, just a lot of basic gun reform stuff that people like, just not even like, yeah, it's just basic stuff people are asking for.
Right. And I haven't, you know, heard, you know, a situation in which, you know, some politicians, right? Let's be clear. Let's not give them too much credit. Some politicians have been, I think, given enough cover by this movement that I've now seen several politicians come out. Democrats, of course, come out and overtly state that they are for assault weapons bans, right? Something that was be considered like, you know, oh, the all fearful NRA was going to come down, right? The, you know, the gods of Moloch and Vulcan were going to come down and bring their death cult to you and kind of, you know, cause you to lose your election, right? And really, that's their consequence, lose their election. But man, did you see any of the CNN forum the other night?
No, I did not.
It's interesting. It's when you had a bunch of students, a bunch of the students who survived the shooting in Parkland School District. And then you had Marco Rubio and kind of two other kind of state legislators that were there, Florida state legislators. And man, those kids, man, they brought it. They brought it directly to these folks, right? Had Marco Rubio sit there and ask a direct question, and you promise to this crowd right now, right? You promise that you will no longer take money from the NRA, not take another campaign donation, right? And Rubio, man, you could see you know how he sweats, right? You know, like, dude. So he starts like sweating and things like, and the crowd
people
is going.
Dilate to.
Yeah, right. He's looking for his water bottle. He's sitting there. He's the crowd.
Man, they get hot in here all of a sudden.
Yeah, right. Exactly. The crowd is going crazy, but you know, just shows you the power the NRA has on people like this. His line was like, I don't follow the NRA. The NRA is investing in my policies, right? You know, so basically, he's got no place to go. So either
and
the here NRA, comes
the tomatoes, and the
oh my god,
the lettuce.
I'm telling you, if fruit was let into that place, he would have been pelted at that point.
Yeah, which is like, you know, it's what they need.
No, that's exactly it, right? That's exactly it. Even the CNN moderator was getting all flustered because, you know, the kids were being a little too unruly. And I'm like, thank God, man. Thank God that these kids are getting unruly, right? They're breaking the rules of what they're supposed to do, right? This one kid just kind of like started walking around the stage and stuff, right? Talking to the crowd. It was great. It was awesome. And the CNN guy at one point goes like, that's what I'm here to do. I'm here to take the crowd, like, because the kid was basically talking to the crowd. It was awesome. But that was the kind of stuff, right? We saw, you know, we heard this in the intro today. Emma Gonzalez, right? That speech that she gave 2 days after the shooting, I believe it was 2 days after the shooting, that lit a fire on the internet, basically saying that, like, these students have had enough. And it's really something. And you heard this echoes of this coming from students both in rallies across the week, throughout the week, and during that CNN forum, and outside the legislature in Tallahassee, Florida, basically saying we've had enough and we're sick and tired. We can't believe that we are the ones who have to push this, that you guys have no backbone, that you will not stand up and do what's right. And you know what? Here we're seeing evidence once again that it is direct action that gets the goods. That is the only thing that moves the needle.
Yeah. And just to say, have you seen some of the conspiracy theories going around that these were student actors, child actors?
Yes, I've seen this.
And did you see? I know we didn't talk about this in the pregame show, but yeah. did you hear about Pennsylvania's very own Darrell Metcalf taking part in this?
I did not, but you know, I think that
Darrell Metcalf,
got to give him the shout out. All right,
basically,
do tell.
He shared the same conspiracy theory that a bunch of the students being bussed into the Florida Capitol for protest were actors. One of the conspiracy theories that got that government aide fired in Florida.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. He started sharing that on Facebook and just started banning people immediately after they started freaking out.
Oh, man.
Darrell Metcalf.
Started dropping the ban hammer.
Yeah. So. Oh, man. But, you know, kudos to those students, you know, and, you know, to give why direct action is so important and why that we've got to kind of like realize once and for all. I mean, I don't know if the Democratic Party itself, the apparatus, will ever get it. But I think progressives are now fully on board with this, that it is direct action that gets the goods. And because you have any question that somehow there's going to be some, you know, like light bulb that goes off in these politicians' minds, Republicans' minds in particular, that's going to cause them to do the right thing, you're nuts. And all you had to do is listen to Wayne LaPierre, the CEO of the NRA, speaking at CPAC yesterday, I guess, basically saying that, you know, he's like, and now the European socialists are coming to take over our government. Their plan is to occupy every corner of our government and then take it over and take away and strip away your freedom. Right. And then he says, and I'm not just talking about Bernie Sanders here. And then the crowd, of course, is like, he said, but what about Kamala Harris? Right. You know, what about, and you'll love this one.
I hear Bill Clinton's a socialist.
Yeah, Bill Clinton. Like he didn't mention Hillary, which I was surprised about. But
Barack Obama.
Yeah, but he basically took all the most kind of like corporate leaning. Like he's like called Cory Booker a European style socialist, right? Like really, the guy who wants to privatize public schools, you can call him. Right. I mean, so that shows you how, on the one hand, how desperate they are, and the fact that they're feeling the pressure that is coming from the student movement, which is amazing. So you've got student walkouts that are going to be happening across the country. You know, that's going to be absolutely amazing. March 24th, I think is the date. for one of the big walkouts. There's another one on March 14th. There's another one on April 20th. You know, I think initially it was funny because there was some back and forth among different activist groups about kind of like who's leading what and so on. And I think, from how I understand what's going on, I think people are settling into like, you know what, this is not in competition over which date we choose, but actually why not just do all of them? Right. Because that we're doing. And what's interesting about it, too, as well, in addition to like the national mobilization that is going on for the 24th, they're using the same kind of playbook that we see from Indivisible. Right. That we're not just going to D.C. and then going to go home, but people are going to their state houses. People are going to the congressional offices, doing the same kind of stuff that we saw through an Indivisible. And these students are on fire.
Well, I can tell you one thing. I know next month the Pennsylvania House Republicans are planning on having an education hearing, and one of the bills they're going to be discussing is the bill to arm teachers. The bill's not going to make it to the governor's desk, but boy, that would be a good time for people to show up, to turn out and show up.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. But so we should just put this on your radar then, because, yes, it is happening here right in Pennsylvania, which is, which you kind of expect, especially. And I don't think I mentioned this in the lead up in here. In Pennsylvania, this is the one that kind of said, OK, yep, we need to make sure that we are absolutely 100% just making sure that we are on board and here in Pennsylvania, because there was a PA church. I don't know if you saw this. That decided to have people, this is out in Wayne County, northeastern PA, had their worshipers bring their assault weapons, the AR-15s, to the church so they could be blessed. And they saw that that blessing, because if they did this, this was part of it, the second coming of Christ. Right. And this is a church that's run by the Moon family. Right. And they were expecting up or 600 people for the ceremony, most of them coming there armed with their AR-15s. So,
and Moon is that crazy person that that Mango just gave an interview to.
That's right. That's right. And with a name like Moon, I mean, you know, you're already there, right? I mean, how more fitting could you be?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so that's cool. But just to give you a rundown, so you have a national school walkout coming up on March 14th, right? That is a walkout that's organized in part by some of the folks behind the Women's March. A Youth in Power, the Women's March, a branch of that from young activists are going to be doing that. They're calling for members to walk off campus at 10 a.m. for 17 minutes, 1 minute for each person killed in the Parkland shooting. That is March 14th. Right, March 24th is the big march down in D.C. for the March for Our Lives. And that's March 24th. And students from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, the ones where the shootings took place, are kind of leading that march. And there's going to be sister marches around the country, just like we saw kind of with the Women's March and other marches, the March for Science and stuff this past year. And then you have the Columbine Anniversary School Walkout on April 20th. That will be another national school walkout plan for April 20th. That will be the 19th anniversary of the 1999 Columbine High School shooting in Colorado. The 19th anniversary of that shooting that basically really caused the people across the nation to take stock. And as you mentioned on the show last week, is like, you know, the one that we thought was going to be a game changer. Instead, now we see this has become routine. So,
yeah.
Crazy. So we also got to say, man, it's like what's happened in West Virginia is just blowing my mind right now. Yeah. You've been following that much?
I didn't realize what was going on until a couple days ago. I didn't realize there was going to be a large walkout. And then, you know, you look at it and a percent a year pay increase, that is a slap across the face if you're a teacher.
No, absolutely. Well, and you look what's going on here is that, that national walkout, that statewide walkout is that this is what teachers have just absolutely had enough, right? That, you know, you're
in West Virginia of all places where it's illegal to do this.
Exactly. That's the important part that I wanted to make sure everybody knows. Like, they are not allowed by law to do this, yet they're doing it.
Now, there's like arguments saying that, like, well, it's illegal for the Philadelphia school district teachers to go on strike. Mm-hmm. Because if they do, they could be subject to losing their teaching license, which would have to go through the Department of Education, like a separate hearing. You think about it, you have 10,000, 15,000 teachers walking out of the job simply because it's illegal. Do you think would be impossible for the governor or the administration in power to fire the whole entire teaching staff, the whole entire school district, and come in and sub it out and contract it out. It would be damn near impossible. You know what I mean?
Right.
Well, I know there's the same thing here. It's impossible for them to replace every single teacher who goes on strike for the couple days, and boom, they did it.
No, that's exactly. And again, let's be clear that this was planned as a 2-day walkout. So that started yesterday and it's running through today. But where this goes from here is a huge question. Right. There's also been threats that are being issued about, arresting teachers and all this kind of stuff. And you know what? The way that these teachers have organized and the militancy which they've kind of brought forth, they're ready to be arrested. Right. If you want to arrest them, you go ahead. You can have pictures all over the national news. You're going to dragging teachers off to jail because they're tired of doing this. And, especially when, again, this was the key what we saw here in Pennsylvania when ABSCUF went on strike for the 14 state university systems, is that the students basically are lining up behind their teachers for the most part. I mean, you've got, students are kind of basically dressed in purple in solidarity with their teachers. Thousands of them are walking alongside with teachers. Thousands of people have showed up at the state capitol in Charleston to protest on the Capitol steps. This is potentially the kind of game-changing action that we can see moving forward. What's also going to be important, it was also important for people to think about for this, is because you actually have the union leadership on board with this action. Right. So very often when we see this kind of militancy kind of coming up with kind of a member movement, sometimes actually the union leadership can kind of basically not get out of the way of their members and kind of try to kind of tamp things down and try to control the masses, so to speak. And here you've got kind of the leadership in lockstep with teachers we're going to kind of bring direct action forward.
And also, this is the type of stuff we need to see whatever post-Janus world looks like.
Yes, exactly.
This is the type of activism that's going to need to be seen from unions coming from here on out, even and no matter what the world looks like after Janus is decided upon.
Right, exactly. And so this is the kind of the lead up. This is kind of, I think, super fitting the fact that the 24th on Saturday, tomorrow, right, the Working People's Day of Action, which is, again, ahead of Janus being argued before the Supreme Court on Monday. Right. So we get a window into the kind of action that is going to have to happen among the labor movement. Because let's be perfectly honest here, is that, as much as, again, you look at national labor unions, like CWA, SEIU, AFSCME, you got the Fight for 15 folks, you got Justice for Janitors folks, right across the board, people that are organizing and kind of standing up and demanding kind of day of action. The problem is, of course, is that we elected somebody named Trump, who appointed Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court, which virtually guarantees that the Supreme Court decision is going to go against public sector unions, which will mean basically a right to work nation. Now, the Saturday's actions, will they put some pressure upon the Supreme Court? Probably. If those actions continue on the following Monday, if there's protests outside the Supreme Court, yes, they might have some pressure. But I think most people are digging in, especially in the labor movement, and basically saying, look, this is it. So we have a choice. We can either kind of like go boo-hoo, cry, and kind of like accept our destruction, or we're going to have to kind of find and dig deep back to our roots, right, and have the kind of direct action and the militant organization, right, and the overt kind of labor organizing that, takes us back to the CIO days. And if that's where we're going to go, that's good ultimately long term for the labor movement if the labor movement invests in this. Again, there's a couple different schools on this. There are people, in public sector unions who they think the sky is falling. And, we've talked about this in the show before, but they think the sky is falling and their solution is to kind of circle the wagons, protect their own, and try to kind of like save business unionism. right? But as I said last week, business unionism is not going to save us, right? Business unionism will not help us. The only thing that will help public sector unions going forward here is organizing, organizing, organizing. The only thing that will happen is you have active members. So what we see in West Virginia, that whole idea is that you've got members who have had enough, who basically said, okay, yeah, we know it's illegal to strike, but we're going statewide. You want to arrest us? Come for us, right? They recognize their value in terms of the importance of the what teachers bring to the classroom, and so they have the walkout. And this is what is going to happen in the public sector, right? Will asks me, for example, are they going to sit there and roll over and basically allow, like, you know, the federal government and state governments to contract out everything to private contractors and have their contracts gutted? My bet is no. My bet is that they're not just going to sit by and let it happen, because I think the members see what's happening, right? And the members are putting pressure on their leadership. And I got to say, and we're going to play this in one of the breaks today, Lee Saunders, the president of AFSCME, put out this excellent video kind of doing kind of a breakdown of what's happening with Janus. What I'm hoping to see is you're going to see more of that coming forward, except targeting members in terms of organizing. Because, you know, we need a strong showing on Saturday for the March, Working People's Day of Action. I will be down in Philadelphia for that action. There's also one in Boyertown. We're going to have notes in the show notes today. We'll have a link in the show notes today. But if you went to go to itsaboutfreedom.org, let me just double check. Yep, itsaboutfreedom.org. You're going to have links to the day of action. You can actually just put in your zip code. You can find out, where it's happening near you. But man, I'm telling you, this is, I think, just a turning point in the history of labor right now, Sean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So great. So, in more fun news, right? To close the segment, got a Missouri governor has, he's having a bad day. I thought, seriously, when I first saw this, I just thought it was just like, no, this can't be real. But it is.
No, this is real. I mean, I remember when the story broke last month that he, did what he did, which was, having an affair with someone. He tied her up, put like a cloth over her head, and walked her into the other room and snapped a picture without her will. This is all alleged. And said, pretty much said, you tell anyone about this. This image is going up online, bound and blindfolded.
That's
and
insane.
She came forward with it, and yeah, there's enough there to cross, federal or no felony charges against the governor. First degree, like, felony charges.
Yeah, he's like, how's that for blackmail, asshole? Right? If he wasn't an asshole to begin with, right? Which he was.
I hear there's an assistantship opening up in the Trump administration.
Exactly. Well, you know what? Trump has cleared a lot of space for people.
The Porter guy,
Well, I mean, Trump does seem to kind of like to have people like that close to him. And, enough people are kind of being driven out of the administration that they need somebody to do some work. So maybe it's like a work release program or something like that. Trump's got his his pardon pen ready so that he can fill positions in his own administration. Oh, my God.
Hired. Oh.
Exactly. Hired. Yeah. This is great. Oh, man. Lastly, this is kind of just a little bit whatever. It's like, but this is the kind of remaking that is happening in our federal government right now. This is I came across this story and I was just like, wow, what we're missing right. What's happening on a daily basis, right, on a kind of almost routine basis.
Wells Fargo has the number.
Is this
one
kind of like oops, sorry. Hold on. What's happening right now, almost on a routine basis within the federal government, is a remaking of, different agencies. And it's happening in a subtle way. It's happening in the language and the mission statements, right, in terms of the hiring. But when I just saw this is, you've got this organization, United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, right? Well, they just changed their official mission statement late on Thursday, and they dropped the language to describe the country, right, as a kind of a nation of immigrants, right? The federal, and here's, this is from USA Today. So the federal agency that grants visas and U.S. citizenship now refers to itself as an organization that, quote, administers the nation's lawful immigration system, unquote. The new mission statement also eliminates the word customers to refer to visa applicants. In a letter to employees, L. Francis Cisna, the USCIS's director, said the changes were a, quote, straightforward statement that clearly defines the agency's role in our country's lawful immigration system and the commitment we have to the American people. Right. So what the effect of this is basically it's lining up that agency, the immigration agency, with ICE. Right. With the basically the roundups that we're seeing of immigrants that are happening across the country right now. And this is really dangerous stuff. And, you know, there's a real question about how much time, energy and cost it is going to take to actually undo some of this stuff if we're ever going to get there. But
well, at least we have the judiciary branch to stop this stuff from happening. Oh, wait, oh, we actually impeach them instead.
Yeah, well, you know what? Hillary Clinton's a criminal, man, so that's okay, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
A little preview on what we're going to be talking about in the next segment.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Just to recall, everybody, elections matter. Never forget that. And teach your
children. No, elections
children
only
that.
Matter if you win. If you lose, it's just about fucking kicking and screaming and cheating your way to victory.
No, no, no. And I was just saying, like, you know, just that my shout out for everyone who felt very good at kind of voting your conscience and not voting for Hillary Clinton and allowing Donald Trump to kind of come in there because Hillary Clinton was not the perfect choice. Just remember Neil Gorsuch. Right. Just remember the remaking of our kind of institutions. Right. Just remember the rounding up of immigrants and kind of shipping them off. Right. Putting them in holding cells for years. Even
Noam Chomsky said vote for Clinton.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And if that, you know, if that's not a clear sign. Right. Noam Chomsky, who's never, ever been a fan.
Sounds so messed up.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, not exactly, you know,
this one out.
Yeah. Not exactly carrying water for the Democratic Party. Noam Chomsky is right. So anyways. Yeah, yeah. Okay, happy, happy. Happy, happy, joy, joy. All right, so this is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. You know, I want to remind everybody to, you know, become a member of Raging Chicken Press. You can become a member of Raging Chicken Press by going to patreon.com/rcpress and become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month, right? Be like Jarrett, right? Last week, you know, we're giving Will the shout-out for kind of giving us a kind of nice sizable donation. This week, the shout-out goes to Jarrett for becoming a member. So be like Jarrett. Become a member. You become a member for as little as $5 a month, man. Come on board. Help support this kind of aggressive, pull-no-punches media. Keep the movement in the media. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press at patreon.com/rcpress now. We shall be back shortly, right after this quick break, to see the hellhole that is PA.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1969. That was the day black food workers went on strike at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Their strike intersected many points central to the social upheaval of the period, including the rights of public sector workers. Besides extremely low wages, workers complained of racial abuse and discrimination on the job. When the administration ignored their demands, the cafeteria workers sat down at the tables and refused to return to the kitchens. Black women workers like Mary Smith and Elizabeth Brooks organized protests and rallies to build public support on and off of campus. As the strike wore on, many students rallied to their defense. The Black Student Movement was the first campus group to support the cafeteria workers. Noting the lag of desegregation on southern campuses and in the South generally, black students added their own demands to those of the workers. They included the expansion of black student aid programs and black study programs. Clashes escalated between students at Lenoir Hall a few weeks later when opposing white students attacked integrated groups of students sympathetic to the strike, forcing the closure of the cafeteria hall. Governor Robert Scott ordered the National Guard on standby. Finally, the workers formed a union and won many of their demands. This benefited 5,000 other state employees as well. But a month later, the University of North Carolina administration betrayed them by contracting out the food service. Many were laid off or fired for union activities. By the end of the year, the now AFSCME-organized workforce struck again over many of the same issues. When renewed student strike support was threatened, management quickly caved, and the strike ended in victory. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. So I just want to kind of let everybody know here. So, going up to the break, right, I did say the hellhole that is PA. But let me be clear about that. What I mean, it's the hellhole that has been dug by this right-wing extremism in this state that the rest of us are forced to have to try to claw our way out of and remake. Right. Just want to be clear about that one, because you've got the literally, I think that they've dug down so deep that they have actually released the demons and they started appearing in the state capitol this week. So you can't tell me, Sean, you can't tell me that Pat Toomey with that forehead is something that it's human. OK, you can't do it.
This is my first time seeing him in person. I thought he was like a lot taller. You know, he's actually like my height. Like, he's actually a short dude. That like forehead gives it off.
It's a forehead that reaches for the sky, man.
But so as you might have heard, new maps were issued last week.
Wait, what?
Yeah, exactly. Like, new congressional maps were
congressional
drawn
maps.
What's that?
I don't know what you're talking about. I haven't heard.
You haven't. So, okay. So,
I have not been under a rock.
So these new maps have been drawn by the Supreme Court. They pretty much said what they did, what they were going to say. They did what they said they were going to do over the past couple weeks. And, you know, Republicans fucking gave them a shit sandwich that the governor was going to reject ultimately, because that's what Republicans did. They came up with a more gerrymandered map that just looked sexy and gave it to the governor. Governor rejected. So on Monday, President's Day, Supreme Court issued a whole bunch of new maps. And boy, Republicans are freaking the fuck out.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So, like, a little back, you know, I'm under the opinion that they did not believe that the courts would have ruled the way they did, and that they thought the courts were going to rule on their side the whole entire time, even though it's a 5-2 court. And they thought they were that entrenched in their own beliefs. And man, the freak out that is going on up on the Hill is absolutely stunning.
I mean, I could only imagine what it's like to be up like in the Capitol right now, kind of around these folks. I mean, it's got to be like a visceral feeling of freak out.
This is definitely the biggest news story since I've been up here for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been up here for 3 years now. This is definitely by far the biggest story that's broken out in the Capitol. And, like, I mean, so a few weeks ago, the Dush introduces a co-sponsored memo to impeach Supreme Courts. You know, this is before I go further, this is fascism.
let's set the ground rules first. Let's be clear.
Like, this is fascism. Wanting to impeach Supreme Court justices or just people on the fucking bench over an issue you don't agree with is fascism. Like, this is what despots do in Turkey, right? Like, you know what I mean? It's like we're seeing what's happening in Turkey right now, and same exact thing. Oh,
yep.
They don't like the justices. They're gone. New courts come in, and it's stunningly, it's in line with the authoritarian regime, right?
Yeah, and you made a good point. Like, I think the thing is I think that they've actually got to the point where they've started to believe their own bullshit. Like, to really to that point that, like, you know, when Toomey comes out and basically, you know, he's saying, you know, like, this is a power grab. I think that a good chunk of them actually believe that.
Yes, yes. So like, Dush's thing, you know, we're talking about it. It's not expected to go anywhere. But, like, what Pat Toomey did the other day, he was asked a simple question, put up on Twitter, put up on Facebook. You know, he was asked a question about the impeachment issues. I believe that's a conversation that has to happen. It's a conversation that has to happen. That's like, you just don't like it's either a yes or no question. It's either, do you think we should be impeaching the Supreme Court or no? And anything else than no is yes at that point. Like, you know, he pretty much, you know, came out in support of impeaching the Supreme Court over a decision he didn't like. Costello came out and said the same thing. Like, I mean, it's making us look batshit fucking crazy in the media, that's for sure.
Well, I think, you know, again, this is one of these things is like when you start, you know,
people should be surprised by this because this is how our politics have been working in Pennsylvania for the past 6 years.
That's exactly the point.
And
I
now
was
people
make,
are
yeah.
all of a sudden, man, things are like fucked up in Pennsylvania right now. And on a national level, it's like this is par for the course.
Well, look, you know, the conversations that you've had with some national journalists, right? Some conversations that I've had with people kind of like, you know, kind of across the country around this stuff and saying, look, this is you need to be paying attention to what's going on in Pennsylvania. Because I think that, you know, the narrative about Pennsylvania is kind of being this swing state, this industrial state, this mix and things, that narrative has just kind of like been carrying kind of media coverage, and we've not been right in the spotlight for a long time. So the kind of crazy politics that we saw with the rise of the Tea Party, and then we saw what happened in Wisconsin, what happened in Ohio, all that kind of like assault was happening here in PA as well, except you didn't have that kind of front character like, you know, Governor Scott Walker to kind of focus in on, because they weren't
You had a really incompetent governor, Corbett, who couldn't get anything done. You had a legislature, Republicans who were still moderate, like Pileggi and people in the southeastern part of the state who are all now retiring this year with the elections coming up. Like, you still had a moderate Republican backstop.
Right.
Throughout those years. But you had a growing concern of, like, you can see where they're going and how crazy the crazies in that caucus really are.
Do you remember, like several years ago now, right? Do you remember having these conversations where you were kind of, I think, you know, might have been your first, maybe second year out there, I'm not sure, but you're having conversations with some folks out there about, you know, and you and I would talk about this all the time, about, you know, you would cover some bills that were being introduced, right? That the bills were being introduced and there was nobody, including you, who believe that those bills were actually going to kind of become law, right? Especially when you've got, I don't know, when Wolf was elected. And there's that question, well, why do you cover it if it's not going to be the law? And that's what was happening with a lot of kind of journalists out there in the Capitol and across the state, really. You see these bills and you say, look, it's not going to become law, so I'm not going to cover it, right? So why do it? This is someone, blah, blah, blah. But really what those bills were, they were indications of the direction of the state. Right. And like, it was for as long as I can remember.
Fundraising,
you were like,
purposes, red meat for your base.
Well, and you were like sounding the alarm bells like, look, this is what these people want.
I know. It's like, I mean, like, look at the Toomey audio was just amazing. Like so the background.
Toomey, walk us
Toomey,
through that. Yeah.
Toomey drove up to Harrisburg, either from like Scranton or D.C., to give this like 10 minute fucking statement going after the Supreme Court and wagging his fucking pocket constitution in the air like it was some sort of measuring contest. But like he just pretty much went down there to wag his hand at the Supreme Court, pretty much calling it a power grab. He started right from the start. Like, he just went right into it. And, you know, he's not filing any lawsuits. That's what the House Republicans are doing, the Republican in leadership. But like, I mean, like, he came down to Harrisburg simply to attack the Supreme Court, which is pretty astounding that a sitting senator did that.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much so. Pretty crazy, man.
Yeah.
And that's what was, you know, we talked about this before the show, is like what was really was nuts about all that, too, is that that's what he led with. Right. You know, if he came up here and he didn't start with like, want to come up here because I know there's lots of concerns and we have inch about election. Nope. He starts right up with like, what has just happened is there's a power grab. And, you know, it's like
an unconstitutional power grab from the Democrat, from a partisan court.
Yeah. You know, Yes. So that's Toomey.
I mean, It was astonishing watching it because, like, you know, you read some of the responses, like, what people don't understand, like, this is what fascism looks like.
Yep.
You know, delegitimizing your judiciary simply because of the fact you don't like a ruling.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
I keep on saying to people all the time, it says, like, just imagine that this was happening in another country right now and what the news coverage would look like of that. Right. Somehow we think we're so special that this is just whatever kind of playful politics or something like that. This is scary.
I mean, this is their Brooks Brother riot they're putting on.
Yes. That's a great way to put it.
Pretty much. This is their Brooks Brother riot that they're going with.
Crazy. Yeah. Oh, boy. So we get the impeachment of the Supreme Court, which, again, I'll fully admit that part of me wants to see that. See that happening just because I want to see the entire shit show unfold. Right.
And I mean, if it's kind of happy, might as well just have front row seats.
Well, no. And the thing is, like, look, is the fact that the national media has finally bit on this and kind of realized, whoa, what's going on over here? This would be the perfect time to kind of like shine a light on the demons that are here. You know?
And also, another thing I like to say, a little self-promotion. The way I got Saul Toomey was there, I came there early for a press conference at 9. I saw people setting up in unusual spots, like, what's going on here? Look at Toomey speaking. I'm like, okay, set up my camera and all. And the thing was, it's this Toomey press conference at 9:30 in the morning. There's like a few print writers there, right? And there's no TV agencies. There's only a few people recording. There's the caucus, Republican caucus recording, PCN's recording, 27 was recording. Mm-hmm. Me and Roxbury were recording as well, and we're the only people up there recording it, and Jan Murphy from Penn Live. But, like, they just threw the whole entire video up on their Facebook page verbatim without looking into it. And when he said that, like, got that question, and we just went, yeah, let's have that conversation.
Yep.
I mean, I knew that was, like, the clip right there. Went out, put it on Facebook and Twitter, and, you know, the stuff went viral.
Yeah, it went viral. I remember you were getting emails from people like, you know, like national media, basically asking if they could use your tweet and use the clip and things like this. Which
I mean, there's also a jury response from a bunch of people. You know, Esquire Charlie Pierce was writing about it. A couple of responses in the Washington Post, you know, The Hill, and a bunch of other places. So I mean, it's starting to scratch the surface, but like it's pretty insane when a U.S. senator is calling for the impeachment of Supreme Court justices on the state level.
Nuts, man. So let's talk. So we've got the Supreme Court kind of like potential impeachment stuff going to go forward, and the Republicans are just going to whatever. They're going to try to blow themselves up the best they can, which is awesome. And so with that, but now that we've got, you know, with these new maps. These new maps, I think, are interesting in a bunch of different ways. One, and again, I think that, you know, my little sad teardrop is there for Rick Saccone. Poor Rick, right?
Yes. So Rick Saccone, who's running in the PA 18th or the 16th against Connor Lamb right now. That district will no longer exist. Connor Lamb was moved out of the district. He's in a slightly more moderate district, still like a swing district or a leaning Republican district. And then Rick Saccone is in Pittsburgh's only Democratic district.
Oh, man.
The only district that's in the city lines of Pittsburgh happens to also include Rick Saccone's house.
Oh, my God. What's going to happen to our godly heritage, Sean? What's going to happen?
God wasn't really with you on that one.
But, man, you know, Rick Saccone, how much you want to bet that Rick Saccone, I can't imagine him pulling out of the race. I'm sure he's going to stay in it, and then he's going to use that as an opportunity to kind of like, you know, I don't know, found the Godly Heritage Foundation for lobbying PA.
Okay, so get this. So Saccone was to try to run for a seat, right? He wants to try to keep his House seat. So in the middle of this race, he'll have to stop. He'll have to stop campaigning and go out and go collect signatures for the House race, which is 300 signatures. You should be able to get that done in a few days or a week, depending on how widespread the district is. And then he would have to, if he wants to run for Congress, on top of collecting signatures, he would have to collect another round of signatures to run for the PA, that new district out there. But he can't collect both signatures at once for the State House and the Congressional House. So he wants to try to get back in the State House. I don't know. He's bringing back the waterboarding towel.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of that going on.
Poor Ricky. Poor, poor Ricky. You're such a good boy. With his godly heritage. Well, if we look at some of the districts, I mean, you know, one, I'm most excited about the new PA 7th. I am freaking thrilled because, as I mentioned in the introduction, is that for the first time, what Charlie, this is kind of like replaces, well, again, it's not just replaces one person's district, but Charlie Dent kind of had Allentown and this kind of ran the Route 222 then out towards Harrisburg, right? It was just kind of like, you know, like highway drive-in district or something. But then what they've done, right, again, this is consistent with the state constitution that, you know, they should be contiguous and they should be compact. And the districts were, now, the Lehigh Valley has for a long time defined itself in these terms, right, as the Lehigh Valley, the Allentown, Bethlehem, Easton, those two. And if you live out there, if you've never been out to the Lehigh Valley, what you'll see is that you don't know when you're going from Allentown to Bethlehem to Easton if you're kind of going through those towns, right? Because they really are all meshed together. It is really a region. This is something that the U.S. Census recognizes as a distinct metropolitan district when it's doing the census. When it's doing the census. So now you've got that, right? And what my case has been for the longest time is that organizing in the Lehigh Valley is the most important thing that has to happen in Pennsylvania to change the politics of the state, right? Because too much like progressives and the left have relied upon Pittsburgh and a ride on Philadelphia primarily, maybe, you know, some state college folks and things like that. And that's where they focused. And they've ignored what's happening in the Lehigh Valley, who lives in the Lehigh Valley, and the kind of, you know, people just bursting at the seams to do amazing stuff. Now that you actually have a defined congressional district there with someone like Greg Edwards running in it, right, is amazing. Like, you have an opportunity. If you go to Greg Edwards, you go to, you know, Greg Edwards for Congress, you look at his district, you look at his webpage. I mean, he's got the Bernie colors flying out there, right? But more importantly, this is a guy that has been organizing in Allentown and organizing in the Lehigh Valley for years. Right. This is not a newcomer. This is something that he has been on the ground working with organizations, working with people to kind of make lives better and to kind of like, you know, train people in organizing. So,
and he was also working working with Reverend Barber down in North Carolina.
Exactly.
Not just anyone, but he's working with some of the most prominent leaders, civil rights leaders today.
Yeah, I mean this guy is amazing. I mean, we got a chance to talk with him a little bit up at the Keystone Progress Summit. That's not going to be the first time we talk to him. He is just he is something else. And you know, guy's a force of nature. When we saw him, you know, give his speech as we were all kind of, you know, closing out the summit, it was like, wow, right? More eyes that get on this guy, the better. And more importantly, if you look at the people that are starting to work on his campaign, there's people, there's student organizers who are now working for his campaign. There's people for, I'm just spacing name, like, you know, there's all sorts of activist organizations that have been active in the Lehigh Valley are working with this guy's campaign, which is amazing. So, hey, man, keep your eyes on Edwards in the new 7th. So,
yeah. Also, like, there's a bunch of new districts in southeastern PA, too. Mm-hmm. The Bucks County Fitzpatrick district, it's a little bit fair. The Montgomery County district is pretty much all of Montgomery County, which is really nice. Mm-hmm. Dalen Leach is looking to looks like he's looking to run in that district.
In the fourth, the new fourth.
Yes, in the fourth. All signs are indicating he is still running, even with the sexual harassment stuff hanging over his head. Mary Jo Daly, progressive female House representative from Montgomery County, she has announced she's going to run. The sixth district got a lot more interesting. That's now a favorable district. That's Costello's district, who called the maps racist and also wants to impeach the Supreme Court. His district goes from a lean R to a favorable Democratic district. If we remember this past year, Chester County was one of those southeastern counties that went Democrat for the first time in their like county's history at this point, some of the row offices. And that district also includes Reading inside of it, too.
Yeah, which is, and this is really, I think, really important because one, I mean, you've kind of been pointing this out for a while now that Reading was split up in what, three different districts before?
Yes.
Right. And now it's part of the six. And I think that, you know, especially this is, again, one of these ones to watch right now, because especially in the climate right now, even though, say, they lean Democrat, right, or is favorable to Democrats there, I think in this climate now, this is one that I'm watching to flip.
Yeah. Smucker's district got a little bit more safer because it's all Lancaster and York County, most of York. Scott Perry's district came up favorable Republican, like an R14 to like an R6, R7. So
this is the new 10th, right? This is the new 10th?
Yeah.
I think, yep.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff. Stephen Bloom is now going to be bunched in with Eichelberger and Reed, it looks like, who are wanting to run for Congress. So, yeah, there's going to be some fun stuff going on. A lot of people, with the way the districts are drawn, it seems like everyone can run for Congress right now.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of primaries going on, a lot of shakeup, too, with this map. Not just for like the Republicans, but also for Democrats.
Well, you know, and I'm looking that this is a really like, I'll give you one example. As I've been, we talked a little bit about this earlier on, but I'm having these conversations with people out in Kutztown, because Kutztown is now what used to be in Charlie Dent's district, right? That part of, you know, that the highway district there from Allentown out the, you know, out towards Harrisburg. Now Kutztown is now lumped in with, you know, it's, and instead of kind of going east-west, it is now kind of much more part of Schuylkill County. So you get Lebanon County, you get parts of Lebanon County, parts of Berks County, parts of Schuylkill, parts of Carbon, and parts of Columbia,
Montour.
I think. And maybe some Luzerne kind of in there. I think so.
You get like the old coal county.
Yeah, right. So you get kind of get this rural... you get this big rural district, right? But you also have, like, again, coal stuff going on there. And it actually, from my perspective at least, it makes a whole lot of sense on one degree in terms of communities of interest. On the other hand, there's people that are really upset about it in Berks County, because Berks County gets split up a little bit, right? Some goes Reading South, right, to the 6th District, like you were talking about. But then it kind of goes north. Now, what's interesting for me is that this is where there's real openings and real potential in my mind for, like, indivisible groups, for activist groups that have been active since the Trump inauguration, looking at organizations like PA Student Power, who we've talked a lot about here, who are organizing on state college campuses, not just in Philadelphia, right, not just out in Pittsburgh, right, but organizing in kind of the 14 state university systems, in addition to other smaller colleges and universities, calling for, you know, kind of college, for, like, free college for all, a whole bunch of other stuff. They've been doing phenomenal work, right? You start looking at where the opportunities is, because now Kutztown University, right, down in Berks County, is out in the same district as Bloomsburg, right, up in Columbia, right? So you actually have now two state university systems that are both unionized faculty, right? And you've got students who are organizing. We know Wendy Lee, remember back from the early days of Raging Chicken, who's been doing bang-up work up there in terms of the anti-fracking movement, right? Kind of that's now connected also as a congressional district with Karen Faradin, right, down at Berks Gas Truth, right? So people that, you know, you start seeing these assemblies in districts like this, and my guess is people that are really familiar with the lay of the land in each one of these districts are going to have those kind of opportunities that didn't exist before. So, yeah, yeah. So that's it. So there's all that. Anything else on the districting stuff?
No, not too much.
That's pretty cool, man. It's been a great week. It's been a great week for that stuff. It's just, you know, I mean, great in the sense of, you know, the craziness is now in the light of day, which is awesome. The fact that you got Toomey to be out there and get him on and get his words out there was awesome. It's crazy. So I'm going to run through a couple things here. This week is also budget hearing week out in the state capitol. And one of the hearings this week had to do with higher education. And there was some interesting stuff that's going on in there. There's some interesting stuff happening around with PASHE. So one of the things that I think took a bunch of people by surprise, I guess, was that the interim chancellor, I'm still trying to get a sense of what is exactly that she's after here. The interim chancellor, his name is Karen Whitney. She basically said that, you know, now that she's interim, she feels the freedom to act more radically in terms of what's happening in the state system. And what exactly she meant by that is not 100% clear, but it's been enough to, you know, make people kind of a little bit nervous, right? Especially when she starts making some comments that, I don't know, got people a little bit upset, right? So, as you know, as part of it, trying to figure out what's going on in the state system, she was asked a bunch of questions, and she started talking about there's an arrogance and elitism at some of the institutions in the system, right, over others, right? And, you know, as someone who works at Kutztown University, that kind of took me back a little bit, because I'm like, really? That's, I mean, I know, like, look, you work with academics, you're going to kind of run into some, you know, like, people that have got, you know, holier than thou kind of perspectives, and they think they're all hot shit, right? That's part of what happens in academia. But my experience in the state system has been, you know, the opposite of that, right? And, you know, maybe it is because, you know, I have a lot of my time spent in the state system is within our union. And I work with people, other campuses all the time, right? I've worked in statewide committees and things like this to deal with kind of like writing and placement stuff in other contexts and more academic contexts. And I've never run across what the heck she's talking about. But, you know, anyway, she's talking about wanting to merge different features and do shared courses, a whole bunch of other stuff. Now, she comes off and she says, here's what it is. These proposals, like merging whatever, you know, merging programs or allowing students to get credentials across the university system, not specific proposals, but things like that. So this is what she says. She said, these proposals, and this has got an article in Education Dive, which I'm very thankful to have come across. It's written, it's edited by Autumn Arnett, who's looking like she's doing some really cool work with all this. Let me get back down to things. So here it is. These proposals have not been met favorably by everyone. For one thing, quote, some of our faculty are so arrogant that they won't talk to faculty members at other institutions because they think they're superior, Karen Whitney said. Not only that, but concern over who gets the credit for which course, even though Whitney is convinced that the student doesn't care. They want a collection of experiences that enrich what they do, is proving another resistance stance. So she does two things in one part. One, she says that the problem is that faculty are too arrogant to work with one another, right? Which is like coming from, you know, the head of the state system. That's number one. And then number two, right? She's saying, look, students don't care about their campus. All they want to do is accumulate credits and get a degree. Right. Which is, again, runs completely counter to my experience working with students every day. Right. So this is kind of like, I think this took a bunch of people back. There were, I think, people within ABSCUF, within the union, some supporters of public higher education who, thought that Whitney, as an interim chancellor, she might be a little more moderate. She had some experience in the system before. She might actually kind of want to advocate for stuff. Instead, she comes out with some of these things out of left field with no real evidence to support it. So it just kind of put a little people on edge. So that she had in one point in there. The one thing she did say, which should kind of prick up the ears of every student in the state system of higher education, is that, yep, she's going forward with more tuition increases, right? She's saying, yep, again, she's going with the narrative that the sky is falling, that we have huge budget deficits and all this flies in the face of what we saw in the Howard Bunce's report, the Bunce's report we did at Kutztown University and this, about Kutztown and the state system. Nope, sticking right with the same thing that happened with the Kutztown University president, going to double down on austerity, going to double down on the sky is falling, going to double down on shock doctrine politics. And what's going to happen? It's going to be shifted on the backs of more students. She's talking for more tuition rise, saying the last tuition hike was not big enough, right? So we're going to have more tuition hikes, and we're going to have more budget cuts. So that's what you have the chancellor of the state system is kind of like proposing in front of like the state legislators. Right, and these hearings, right? And to give you a sense of what the tenor was of that, we got this sound. This kind of came in this morning from our good friend Senator Wagner. Now, the sound is a little garbled on this, so I'm going to try to get it so you can hear it. But this is one of the things that Senator Wagner said about funding for higher education, as there were arguments being made that, you know what, we should make sure that we fund public higher education. We should increase funding. And here's his comments.
For those of you that think your school's going to be around 4 years from now, you know you're around. And I can tell you something, that we are going to stop pumping money into this system. And it's ridiculous.
So if you couldn't hear that, what he said is that for those of you who think these schools are going to continue to be around, right, they're not going to be around, right? We're not going to continue to pump money into this system, right? So let's remind everybody that this is the guy who's running for governor, right? He's got the support of the Breitbart crew. Right. He's got this right wing agenda, this anti-union agenda, this anti-public agenda. And he's basically saying flat out in these budget hearings that, yeah, you think your schools are going to be around? No, we're going to shut them down. Right. Boom. Right there. So this is the Senator Wagner that that we're going to have to, you know, deal with. So this is why, you know, if you, you wonder why we spend so much time talking about Wagner, paying attention to some of the things that he's done. From everything from, like, you know, decking the one camera guy, right, to making absurd claims about global warming as the result of people's bodies being warm, right, just rando stuff, but also his associations with the far right, the racist comments that he makes about, you know, George Soros and things like this that we've covered on this show. All that is the full package. And this is the guy that the Pennsylvania Republican Party just endorsed for governor. Right. So they are putting their weight behind that guy. Right. So let's be clear. This is the PA Republicans' preferred choice to run for governor. And that's the agenda that they bring. Right. So look out for that this week, folks. Crazy. One last thing I want to throw in about I don't know if you saw the launch yet, Sean, but the PA Student Power Network has just launched a kind of new webpage. It's called collegeforallpa.org. And basically what they're doing is they're pushing to get candidates, right, political candidates and sitting legislators to sign a pledge. Right. And the pledge basically is pretty simple. Right. It says. The pledge is very simple. Basically, it's – well, hold on a second. I just lost my page. Oh, sorry about that. It's basically calling to say to take a pledge to stand up for students by supporting College for All across Pennsylvania. I will use the power of my office to make state-funded school tuition free and ensure that quality higher education is available and accessible to all Pennsylvanians. Right. So, again, you can go this College for All PA. Right. What they're really wanting to do, they're focusing on legislators here. So they're looking for people to help out, meet with their legislators, try to get them to take the pledge. There's a toolkit that they have online, which is absolutely fantastic. From what I understand now that the PA Student Power Network, right, has also got kind of an increase in their building out some of their staff. There's the student organizers who've been around now for a year or so, and they are really hitting the ground running. And what we should say, too, as well, right now, there are four pledge signers already, right? And they are, we've already talked about him, Greg Edwards, right? He's a candidate for the U.S. House, the PA 7th, right? That's the new Lehigh Valley position, right? Awesome. Jess King, right, who we've talked about a lot on this program, right? He's running out in Lancaster. She's a candidate for the PA 11th. Right. Summer Lee, who we got a chance to meet out at the PA, the Keystone Progress Summit out in Harrisburg a couple of weeks back. She's a candidate for state representative in District 34. Right. She's fantastic. And Chris Rabb, right. State representative from District 200. He's got down there. So Chris Rabb, who also we're out there in Harrisburg, who has been he's like one of the tips of the spear in progressive politics and elected officials, if you ask me. Pretty cool. So that's a big rundown. That's a big rundown on that stuff. I think I just wore myself out, Sean.
Yeah.
The one thing, look, I gotta say this. I posted something to Facebook this week, and I just want to kind of touch upon it now. We've talked about the opt-out stuff on the show quite a bit. We've talked about the testing regimes. Right now, like, again, if you become a member at $10 a month, we're going to send you Steven Singer's book. I mean, probably one of the key voices against the anti-testing regime, the anti-austerity policies, the racism that we see that are embedded in these policies of standardized testing and so on. So, in my mind for the long time is like, you know, I said, okay, I don't want my kids to take part of this. And, my wife and I have had conversations about how to do this and stuff. And, we're still working on it, right? So we're at one point we said, okay, well, look, I've had this thing in my head, and you know, this is probably a wrong way of thinking about it, but I'm saying, okay, look, if I'm going to opt my kid out of these things, I got to be prepared to organize around it, right? Because it's not just about my kid, right? It's not just about subjecting my kid to this stuff. It has to do with all those kids in that school. It has to do with the way that the school district that my kids are in, right, the numbers that come out of this one, because it's a pretty decent school district. It's a Pennridge school district. The numbers that come out of this will be used to measure against other schools, right, and shut other schools down, right? I find this the fact that we are shutting schools down, that we are defunding schools on the back of 9-year-olds and 10-year-olds and 11, I find it immoral. I find it unconscionable. And we have to find ways of fighting back against this. And so now I'm presented with this in a very kind of direct way. So my son came home from school on Tuesday. They had Monday off, so he comes home on Tuesday. And they had spent just – and I didn't know this was coming up, and he never mentioned it to me. So I don't know if he knew or not. Sometimes he tells me, sometimes he doesn't. But he comes home, and he basically says they spent the whole day practice testing, right? Whole day school practice testing. And it wasn't just that, right? It wasn't just that. But he was visibly upset. And I want to be clear. This is my son. Like, he loves school. And his teacher this year, he absolutely adores. And she's fantastic, right? He's learned so much. I mean, I've seen him blossom this year in so many ways, right? So the teacher is awesome. We've got an incredibly supportive school district. The principal at the school has been fantastic about communication. So this is kind of like best case scenario, right? But he comes home and he's visibly upset, right? And he talks about this test, right? And I said, well, whoa, what happened? He said, well, we're practicing for the PSSAs. And they told us that if we don't finish in time, that we have to work through our recess. And if we're still not done, we have to work through lunch to finish it, right? And he's like freaking out, right? Just about this stuff. And this is just day one of a practice test, right? Then he talks about some of his friends, right? There's two other girls in his class, right, who basically were sitting there, and they were really upset because they were told on the PSSAs, right, you want to write for your essay or written response, you have to fit it in this one particular box. And apparently these two girls, right, love to write, right? They love to write, right? And so when they started writing too much, right, as a writing instructor, that drives me insane. But they started writing too much, quote unquote, and were told they couldn't. They had to fit it in that box. And they walked away upset. So this is day one of a practice testing. And I've already seen this happening in the homework coming back, that they're preparing them for bubble sheets, right, to move forward. So we talked about what to do. And you're like, look, we're going to go in and we're going to look at the test. We're going to go through what we need to do in that school. Right. But I'm also looking for people in the Pennridge School District right now. Right. That, you know, other parents who are going through the same stuff and want to make sure that we start educating ourselves and other parents about opt out possibilities. Right. Because this is just unconscionable. And it has to, you know, again, it's just a perfect example. It has to happen where we live. Right. It has to happen in our communities. And so that's kind of the road that I'm on right now. And my son is like, you know, the one thing that made him feel better is I said, you know, look, let's see, what can we do about this? I said, will you do me a favor? I said, how about when you do these things, right, because you're upset about this now, will you write it down for me? Right. And keep a journal about this experience. Right. Because that's important. Right. And we've talked about telling our stories, how important it is to tell our stories before, and keep a journal and write this stuff. And my son's eyes lit up and he went upstairs and started writing this journal because he wanted to get it out so bad. He was so frustrated and so upset with the experience that he just had. Right. And I've never seen him act in this way exactly like this before. So this is already setting off alarm bells for me. And it was enough to get my wife to kind of say, oh, okay, now I see what you're talking about. Right. So that's kind of moving forward. So this is something I'm going to be touching base with on the show too, as well. You know, I recommend that, you know, go over to Rick Smith's show and listen to Rick Smith's show, especially as testing, the testing season approaches. Cause Rick is always really good about bringing people on the show. That's where I got my education about opt out. That's where I got my education about what these standardized testings do, what they do. Check out his show when he's bringing on, these different folks from the opt out movement and from kind of education, education activist, to talk really about what's going on. Because, look, it's up to the parents. And I've talked to some teachers this past week. Right, not the teachers in my kid's school, but some other teachers about this week who are so frustrated with this. And they said to me, look, the only way this is going to happen is the parents have to get involved. And they said sometimes what happens is parents get all worked up and they start thinking about like status questions. Right. Well, their kid does well on these things. So, you know, they wanted to show that their kid does well on these things. Right. And then they don't do anything. Right. And so they want to get by because their kid's not going to be negatively affected as they see it. Say, look, the only thing that happens is that when parents get together and stand up. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to talk about this as this unfolds. I'll share a little bit some about my son's experiences so far and what we're able to do. All right. And if you know anybody, again, anybody out there knows somebody in the Pembridge School District that wants to activate. Get active on this one. They could shoot me kind of email at ragingchickenpress@gmail.com or editor@ragingchickenpress.org. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We will be right back with the last call. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Over the past 6 years, we've brought unapologetic, progressive, activist media to Pennsylvania and beyond. We've helped hold those in power accountable and shine a light on some amazing activist work. We've broken national stories and established a reputation as an aggressive, independent media site. As newsrooms close and traditional journalists lose their jobs, hard-hitting, investigative news suffers. If we care about our democracy, we have to find new, sustainable models of journalism. And frankly, no one's going to do it for us. After the Trump election, we dug in even deeper. Thanks to some longtime members, one-time donations, and a shift in other resources, we brought on more writers and started paying them. Now we're doubling down and want to expand our infrastructure and pay our writers even more. We need to invest in our media if we have a chance to resist the unprecedented assault on democracy, working families, women's rights, and our planet. History will remember the choices we make today. So take a minute to become a member of Raging Chicken Press. For as little as $5 a month, the price of a local craft beer or a cup of coffee, you will be supporting homegrown progressive journalists and media activists. Go to RagingChickenPress.org and click on the Support and Membership tab to become a member. Leave a one-time donation or learn about other ways that you can help. We don't have billionaire backers. Keeping progressive activist media going strong depends on you. Thank you for all your help and support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back, everybody, to today's Out the Coop Last Call. Yes, we talk about space news, we talk about beer, we talk about anything that is kind of happy and rando that we want to talk about for the week. So Sean, anything that is just kind of like, you know, I don't know, maybe happened to you this week that was kind of fun?
I don't know. I really can't think of something. I mean, there was this Twitter debate I almost got pulled into.
Yeah, I think I didn't realize that you and Evan McLaren and the Big Sarge were so tight like this. Because I guess the Big Sarge got in touch with you and really upset kind of Evan McLaren, because Evan McLaren doesn't like the Big Sarge.
So I'm getting back from the bar.
I love the fact that so many stories start like this.
Yeah, it's like 7:30 at night. I had a couple beers at bar for happy hour. Getting back, and I
feel a little happy.
Popping off, like, hey, can you message? Sarge goes, yo, you should message me. I got something big for you. I'm like, yeah, whatever. Like, am I getting doxxed right now? and then right off the bat, as soon as that happened, like this alt-right account says, yeah, Big Sarge is a pussy. He won't even challenge Evan McLaren to a debate. So I go, what's going on here? And I start looking into Evan McLaren's timeline. And McLaren mentioned that Big Sarge called him out to fight him and gave him a place to show up and a time. So McLaren shows up at that time, given time and place, and Big Sarge was nowhere to be found.
Big Sarge didn't come out to fight Evan McLaren?
No. So McLaren.
I love this. This is like so freaking high school schoolyard. This is so much an allegory of kind of like what this, you know, what this these people are about.
So McLaren then calls out Big Stars for not showing up to his ass kicking. And then afterwards, after like they start going after each other on Twitter, they then get in contact with me, and I'm just like, fuck this, I'm not getting involved. And then McLaren tweets out, "Oh, you had to go to the Antifa journalist at RC Press, Sean, for your help." And I'm like, I retweet, it's like, I'm not getting involved. I'm just here for the popcorn. Yeah. And McLaren retweets my tweet and says, "Me and you both."
It's like, oh my god, what just happened here? Like, how do you even place all this?
And they just went fighting each other all night. The whole night, I was just getting like, and I'm not getting involved in this pissing match with like, what? What do I have to benefit from it? The five people that follows Big Sarge on Twitter, meaning Miney, Mo, and Jack, and then
like they might not follow, they might not follow Big Sarge on Twitter, but they follow Big Sarge in his YouTube channel, man.
All five of them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, whatever iteration of it. You ever looked at that guy's YouTube channel?
I have not.
Like, he's basically remade it and renamed it, reformatted it like I don't know, 6-7 times. You can't even figure out where the hell his show is. It's hilarious. We should have mentioned this right up top, everybody. So we were talking about these two alt-right kind of like white supremacist right-wing like
Big Sarge ain't a white nationalist anymore.
Oh, he's not? He's just a Trumper?
Yeah, he's a Trumper.
He's the Trumper now. So you got the Trumper, and Evan McLaren, of course, is kind of like, you know,
the Nazi.
The Nazi. So you got the Trumper and the Nazi. I mean, seriously, you could start. I mean, we got to start, you know, I don't know.
I'm not getting involved in their pissing match. I mean, what do I have to benefit from that besides like having a bunch of Nazi trolls tweeting at me the whole night?
Exactly.
Like, dude, I ain't getting fucking involved in this.
No, exactly. Like, I don't know.
Ain't my cross to die on.
I don't know. There's so much rich possibility, Sean, just to a sentence that begins with something begins with a Nazi and a Trumper walk into a parking lot. You know, it's like a Nazi and a Trumper like start tweeting on I mean, this is whatever.
I have to pull up the photos. I took a bunch of screenshots of these tweets. And they were just gold.
Oh, like, they were.
I'm pulling it up now.
Pulling them up just simply to bedazzle your social media account.
Yes. Exactly.
Oh man.
All right. So, like the tweet. I guess I should just give like a play-by-play tweets. As if my computer isn't crashing the process.
Yeah. Well, maybe it will. We'll see.
No. The Twitter images are not. Nope, not working. And it just opened up as soon as I closed it. All right. So McLaren tweets this out. Conservatives say there's no room in the public discourse for white nationalism, but they'll destroy me in a debate anyway. I offered to come on his show, but he says he's fully booked. Here's his fully booked no show, no guest. 18 viewers, call in. And then McLaren goes on, update, Moab Radio whined today that this tweet amounted to some sort of attack or threat, then challenged to meet me in person where he'd beat me up or something. I appeared at the restaurant where he said to find him. He wasn't there and blocked me when I called him out. Oh, sad display. God. Moab Radio is an example of the kind of grassroots conservative who, along with InfoWars tier goofballs and mediocrities, remains welcome in my MAGA organizations, while serious, intelligent alt-writers are automatically banned to clown caliber.
Oh, the beauty. The beauty. The
and
beauty.
Then, yeah.
Oh, man.
Here we go. So then, and then, like, McLaren calls him out for, like, you got in contact with this dude. He's like, what makes you think that? Because you requested for him to send you a private message. See how this works?
My
it's
God.
Just like, I don't know. Maybe you tweeted it out in public that you wanted him to fucking talk to you.
My God. Crazy stuff. Well, I got, you know, whatever. Alt-right night.
It was my entertainment for the night.
It was funny. I was glad you sent that to me because it was very amusing.
And I've just been up. I was like, this is what I'm getting involved with right now. And the funny thing is, like, everyone in Harrisburg is like, yeah, fuck that Big Sarge, dude.
Big Sarge!
Big Sarge.
Well, all right. So I got
my... He's from, like, Moab, Utah. Is that why it's called Moab Radio?
I think Moab is like the mother of all bombs, right? That's the,
I know, but,
that's
I'm joking.
Oh, okay, sorry, my bad.
You don't think he's a peace-loving hippie from Utah?
You pulled off the dry humor very well. Usually I don't fall, but I did. So I'm going to do my little bit of space news before we get into talk some beer. So I just thought that I want to – I'll give a shout-out to Marcy Bianco, was writing for – NBC Digital, I guess, right? And I frankly was pretty surprised to see this on like NBC Digital, but I was like, man, this is exactly it. So she wrote this article, basically said the patriarchal race to colonize Mars is just another example of male entitlement. And I was like, holy crap, this is exactly like on point with so much, right? So she's talking about Elon Musk, and she's talking about Jeff Bezos and this kind of like this, you know, attempt to, you know, colonize Mars, a race to colonize Mars and all this kind of stuff. And I just want to read, I'll just read two paragraphs from here. I'll give you a flavor of it. And we'll put a link to this in the show notes. But so she says, these men, particularly Musk, are not only heavily invested in who can get their rocket into space first, but in colonizing Mars. The desire to colonize, to have unquestioned, unchallenged, and automatic access to something, to any type of body, and to use it at will, is a patriarchal one. Indeed, there is no ethical consideration among these billionaires about whether this should be done. Rather, the conversation is when it will be done. Because in the eyes of these intrepid explorers, this is the only way to save humanity. It is the same instinctual and cultural force that teaches men everything and everyone, and their line of vision is theirs for the taking. You know, just like walking up to a woman and grabbing her by the pussy. It's there, so just grab it because you can, right? And I was like, boom, this is exactly it. I mean, this is the kind of discussion that I've been, you know, hoping to see more of in terms of what we're talking about in terms of space policy, in terms of what is happening right now. Because in my mind, right now, we are on that unstoppable trajectory, right? That doesn't mean it can't be stopped. But I'm saying if nothing is done, right, you don't interfere with the entropy of the system, boom, it's going to keep on going. Not the entropy, the whatever. So, and this is a perfect example, is because right now the default mechanism, right, I've talked about it in the past, is extractivism, right? But she's absolutely right. I mean, it's kind of same colonizing force. I mean, feminists have been talking about colonization, right, in terms of gender, you know, in gender terms for quite some time now. And so for her to kind of bring her sights on this, I thought was kind of like standout. So I'd really recommend checking out her piece. It's Marcy Bianco, it's NBC. I'll put a link in the show notes. You know, I'm just becoming more and more convinced as I just got to find the time to kick myself in the pants and start writing about this stuff, because these are really the questions that are on the table here. If let's say one of two things, like one, the question about whether this should be done is so important, right? Personally, I don't think it's going to be stopped, right? I think this is on this kind of trajectory. And so then the question is that what can we learn? What do we know from kind of histories of colonization and resistance that we need to begin inserting into these conversations now? Because otherwise it is going to be like the colonizers kind of free market kind of wet dream kind of moving forward. So just put that shout out there. Cool. So Sean, you've got some beer news, sort of. You got some sort of can or something. I just don't even understand what this is.
So we have a couple bartenders to come in from a place called Kushwa, which is in Hagerstown, Maryland, right over the border.
Yeah,
really nice. They've been open for about a year now. I've been able to get some of the crowlers, and I got a couple cans of their 1 year anniversary collab that they did.
Oh, cool. Well, so it's not completely insane that or completely crazy that I don't know who these are. So they're relatively new.
What's that?
They're relatively new, you're saying. So
yeah, they've been around for about a year now. It's a really nice brewery. They've been killing it with like their hazy, cloudy IPAs and stuff like that. So definitely something to keep an eye out on.
Awesome. So check that out. So I've got a bunch of things to run through. So this is a huge deal, right? Saucony Creek is planning to open a tap room at Franklin Street Station in Reading. That is like awesome, right? Because we all know, like, free will, you know, again, I was thinking about this before. It's like one of the things that, you know, talk a lot about free will, talk about a lot of Saucony Creek. It's like, I'm a big fan of saying, you know, like, to support the kind of, you know, craft breweries and things like this that are in our communities, right? And so I'm mostly part of, you know, Free Will, because I live in Perkasie and they're in Perkasie, and I work over in Kutztown. That's why you hear them so much about it. But I wouldn't be talking about them if I didn't, like, absolutely love their stuff. So we'll say that. But one of the things you remember last week's show, I talked about Saucony Creek's food, which is just freaking amazing, because I was there for lunch the last week. But the fact that they were going to kind of looking to kind of renovate the Franklin Station and open a tap room down in Reading is phenomenal. Because we already see that, like, Free Will has done that up, has opened up their own kind of tap room, and they've kind of expanded stuff out. To see that happening with Saucony Creek is also great. I'm kind of psyched to see that. So look out for that. Again, if you want more on that, you can click it on the show notes and you can check that out. While we're on Saucony Creek, they've got the beer they call the Unicorn, right? The Unicorn is like if I remember right, it's a kind of hazy IPA, New England IPA. If I write about that, let me see if it's going to come up. Hazy Juice Bomb. Here's how they describe it. It's a New England IPA. It comes at about 8%. It's a hazy juice bomb. They call it, with Citra and Mosaic hops, full body, dry hops with that crushable citrus finish. And the last time out, I had some of this. It was fantastic. They got a new release coming too as well. They're doing the same kind of stuff they did on this right before Thanksgiving. They're putting together a can release that, if you, again, follow the links in our show notes, look for the Unicorn presale, and you can get tickets. And if you buy a ticket, that gives you, I think it's like $35, $39 or something, that gives you 3 crawlers, right, and a ticket for a draft on March 3rd. So you go pick up the stuff on March 3rd. March 3rd also happens to be the 5th anniversary, or the 5th birthday of Saucony Creek Brewery. So you can kind of stick around there. They're going to have people there all day. There's going to be live music and so on, which is really cool. And lastly, on the Saucony Creek front, I just had their rum barrel aged Schnickel Fritz, right? And Schnickel Fritz is this kind of chocolate imperial stout that they have, which I like to begin with. It's also got a cherry taste to it. But this one was aged in rum barrels, and that was my treat to myself last night, because it was really good, really tasty. So check that out. They have a few bottles of it left. I don't know if there's actually going to still any left. There's only, I think, 3 or 4 bottles last time I was there. I didn't know if they have it in the back or not. Lastly, on the Free Will front, I talked about this last week. Again, my apologies again if anybody ran out on Friday to try to get the orange-colored male content. I guess I misread the post. It was not released until Tuesday. I was one of the idiots who ran out there on Friday to try to get it, and I said, hey, where's the orange-colored male content? And they're like, oh, it's not until Tuesday. But anyways, so I went. I picked up that. It's fantastic. It is absolutely fantastic. If you are in the area, go get it. It is a double IPA with Caracara oranges. Comes in at 9.5%. It's delicious. It's like full. It's juicy. It's smooth. It's just, and the orange is just like at the perfect level. I my mouth is watering just even talking about it right now. So I had one, and I'm like, I cannot have another because I need to save these things. So that's pretty cool. So yeah, that's kind of, we got the rundown for the taps around town right now. I also know there's something else that was going on that I just can't remember, but we'll have to come back to it. Come back to it another time. So I don't know, Sean, anything else for kind of looking forward to the weekend or fun stuff coming in?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to some fun stuff. Looking forward to be hanging around the cap a little bit more in the future. So,
oh, and I should say too as well, I forgot to mention this. I want to thank to one of our listeners/readers for giving me the tip on the tap room and opening up in Reading. That was sent to us by one of our readers, so I want to make sure that I give them a shout out there too as well, because that was pretty cool. The other thing, this just came in literally, the NRA. I don't know if people saw this. The NRA. They have a bank in Oklahoma, I think, that basically were the ones that were issuing their credit cards. Those folks basically said that because of this and the NRA's stance on this, they are no longer going to be supporting, or they're not going to renew the contract with the NRA to be issuing their contract. And then the other one, where did it go? It just literally popped into my box. There's basically another company that I'm not going to be able to find it in time, but there's another company that came out and basically showed that, well, the NRA, one of the companies that was giving discounts to NRA members, has also now withdrawn that. They will no longer be giving discounts to NRA members. This is the kind of real material impact that those students are having that are doing that organizing work. So watch that. I would keep my eye on, the kind of boycotts and the pressure campaigns are going to be happening with the NRA right now. That's absolutely critical. I want to remind everybody that if you are around on Saturday, you can get out to the Working People's Day of Action down in Philadelphia or in Boyertown, or you just go to kind of go check out the Working People's Day of Action. Search that. Find out. Plug in your working. Just search up Working People's Day of Action. Plug in your zip code and to find one that's near you. It'd be really important to have out there ahead of Janus on Monday. In the meantime, you know what? I certainly hope that you all are going to have an awesome, awesome weekend. Hopefully it's a weekend full of resistance and organizing. I'm getting ready for yet another crazy week to come, I'm sure. Anything else for the good of the order, Sean?
That is it.
All right, man. You got to understand, Sean just cannot stand. He gets at this point, and he just cannot stand even being on this anymore, listening to my voice, right? That's why we only talk like once a week, right? Because he could barely tolerate me by the end of the podcast. So that it is. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. I want to thank everybody for tuning in this week. Remember, become a member of Raging Chicken at patreon.com/RCPress. See ya!
Could have ever been done to prevent this. We call BS. We say that tough, they say that tougher gun laws do not decrease gun violence. We call BS. They say a good guy with a gun stops a bad guy with a gun. We call BS.